This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me, you not gonna do nothing, you are not above me. I bet you wish you was me, I know that I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, my boy Tortu! What the fuck, Tortu?
2 days, baby.
No, don't you start.
Two days.
See, you're cut off now. You're
done. Wait.
You're cut off. You didn't shake the shake. There we go. A little bit of that. And then no more of that pirate shit.
2 days for all baseball, baby.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Go Mets. Go Yankees.
Baseball on?
It's going to be.
2 days.
Every day for the next 6 months.
How excited is Chico?
Are you watching basketball?
No. I think I watched zero basketball this weekend, but I watched 2 Pirates spring training games. That's no joke.
That's riveting.
That's insanity, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, don't be
listen, man.
That.
You know, when you're a fan, you're a fan.
I didn't even know they played those.
You gotta lean into it.
What are you doing? The tournament is on.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Bergie.
How many times can you watch a ball go into a hoop, really?
I will say, like, because I started watching some of that, and compared to football, I'm like, kind of like, I mean, sometimes it's sick. Like, sometimes they do sick stuff.
Like baseball?
No, basketball.
Oh, basketball.
But
you're really not going to like baseball.
No, I watch baseball. I actually do like baseball. I've watched
baseball. Baseball's
before.
Like relaxing. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like you just chill and watch the game. It's not like so intense. Like football, you're just like,
I know,
in
I love
it.
That.
Right. Yeah.
But then,
look at you. You're like becoming a fan.
I know. But then I've been watching the college basketball, and I'm like, well, like, these guys are kind of like bad at this, like, not compared to me, but compared to
the NBA.
Yeah,
right, the NBA is just, they're so sick.
Yeah,
right.
So but, I want to see that. I want to see like cool spin moves.
Yeah, just watch the last 2 minutes of close games, and
yes,
then it'll be,
yeah,
awesome.
That's what I've been
that's
doing.
What you should do.
It's, yeah, it's funny because I feel the opposite about basketball. I feel like the NBA is very hard to watch, maybe partly because I'm just not that big of an NBA fan, but also partly because I like the margin of error in college. They're not just going to make every open fucking shot.
AKA the
you know?
Fucking chaos.
Yeah, they're not going to. They're
yeah,
like
when the ball's in
the
air, you're like holding your breath.
Right. Well, it's just like there's no defense in the NBA. So it's like,
there's,
you know.
Defense.
There's
what? In what
no, there's
NBA?
Not.
Did you see that All-Star game? There was some good defense going on.
That's right.
They only scored like 400 points combined.
Yeah, there is a bunch of defense going on.
I saw a side by side of the 90s All Star game. Wow, that was a big difference.
What'd you do?
A light.
Oh, shit.
I saw a side by side of the 90s All Star game where Barkley was either posting up or D'ing up someone and they almost fist fought. I think it was Barkley and Bird. And like they legitimately almost fist fought. Like they were like wrestling on the court during the All Star game. And then they cut to this year's All Star game. And somebody just went coast to coast while 9 other guys stood on the court and just like opened up like the splitting of the sea.
They don't get any incentive to play, right?
No. I mean, All-Star games are a joke.
Yeah.
Every sport.
Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Baseball's probably the best one.
I feel like they wanted to do something where the winner of the All-Star game gets home court advantage, which I think that's some in some other sport as well.
They do that in baseball.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's it's a work in progress. We're not so sure about this experiment, but we're trying it, I guess.
I don't hate it.
Well, in baseball, it's more feasible because like you have less of an injury risk.
Yeah.
You know, but like if you did the Pro Bowl for who hosts the Super Bowl, you can't do that.
No.
They've literally turned it into flag football.
Yeah.
same thing with hockey. Like hockey's just basically turned into 3-on-3
yeah,
and a skills competition. Where
I like the football stuff when they do all the different activities.
The combine?
The skills like challenge.
The skills challenge. And
yeah.
That's
cool.
Fun.
Yeah.
Somebody almost ran a 4.19 this year. So I think the lowest was like 4.21, 4.22, something like that.
That's
those,
fast.
Those 40s are getting really crazy.
I used to
fast.
Run a 4.2 in high school.
Shut up.
Did you?
to your ass?
42, maybe.
42 minutes. When, that's real tortoise.
There, you know, there's a certain aspect to just being not even necessarily being fast, but like being able to run. And we came from like this little podunk town where we just didn't really, you know, we didn't train. Like I look at these kids now. I go to a gym where there are kids who at 14 are already signed to D1 contracts. And it's like these guys are fucking machines. They're just in the gym 24/7. Like they're training, they're speed training, they're doing sprints, all this stuff. We showed up after school and we did our 90 minutes of BP and we went home and stuff like that. So when I got to college, I was in no way, shape, or form capable of running for any amount of time. And just to get into fall ball, you had to run a 60-yard dash in under 8 seconds and a mile in under 8 minutes. Now, I can't explain to you how pedestrian those times are. I mean, you can genuinely speed walk a mile. Yeah. In 8 minutes.
Speak for yourself.
I mean, it's a fast speed walk, but like
you can jog.
You certainly, if you can pick them up and put them down, you can do it in 8 minutes. And an 8 second 60 is the equivalent of like what the slowest lineman on the face of the earth ever ran a 40 in. Like,
8 second 60.
Yes.
So I'm thinking like, yeah, 40 is like if you run a 40 in like 5 flat, that's like for like a normal person, it's probably decent.
Right.
So then you only have to go 20 more yards in 8 seconds and you're already moving.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's slow. I mean, like embarrassingly slow. I couldn't get in. It took me 3 weeks to get into fall ball. I couldn't beat these times.
Jeez.
I was running like an 8.160 and I was like, no, I just.
Would you have some kind of underlying condition?
Did you have a health condition? Not letting you get okay.
It's like, I wasn't fat either. I was just like, I was awkward still. I didn't really like know the mechanics of how to be an athlete yet. Like I was just used to doing things that
how
came
old
naturally.
You?
18. 18, oh, yeah. 19, yeah. Yeah. Well, 18, it was fall ball.
Definitely, yeah. You should be able to do that at 19.
I shit you not. Like when we ran our first mile to try to get in, I was so gassed by the end. And people were beating me by like hundreds of yards. Like hundreds of yards. I was dead last by
did
so far.
Did you just like take off in a full sprint and then like gas out? Like what did you? What?
Partly. I mean like one of the first times I tried it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I'm just going to go hard. And then you're like, okay, I'm going
to
die.
I just had no idea like how to do these things. We never did it.
How to run. Right.
I'd never ran a mile in my life.
I was running.
You didn't have to run miles in school?
Where were we going to run? We had no track.
You don't have in elementary school, we used to run like just the perimeter.
Yeah.
Like
perimeter what? Bro, we had a gym the size of this podcast room.
The outside. The back, like the yard. I mean, the yeah, like the yard. Yeah. Like if you was in jail, it'd be the yard.
The yard.
tell them what our outside looked like. It was a concrete parking lot.
It was.
And then run around.
Yeah. Why didn't they make you run around?
They had like a gravel like track around the field that you could run.
But that's the football field. That had nothing to do with our school. We never went there.
You could go there.
I mean, sure, on my own time, but like the baseball field was off campus. There was no track there.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So it's like I didn't play football. I never went to the football field.
What did you guys do in gym class?
We played dodgeball and volleyball and like we played sports. But the gym was relatively small. It was the size of a basketball court, you know? So I had never really run.
Hair is not Berkey.
This was not me. That is correct. 4.22, Jesus Christ.
That's insane. That is I mean, they're creeping into 4.1s, which is like...
I mean, that's like Olympic speed.
He I'm really
look,
curious.
He's just like... It looks like so weird because he looks like he's kind of running not that fast, but it's right. Right. Moving fast.
Yeah.
Really curious what I ran because I was really fast. Like absurdly fast.
So fast to give you a comparison of like how much of this, I mean, yours I'm sure is like quite natural. Like I doubt that you were really out there doing sprint work.
No, it was 100% natural.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I always did sprint work because
like Brian was fast too. It was the same thing. He didn't like train.
I mean,
he just
I always did
was
like,
naturally fast.
Yeah. Did like running and like every work because I always played sports since day one. So.
Yeah. I remember my senior year, I hit a double, and our social studies teacher was at the game, and like, it ended up being a ground rule double, where it bounced over the right field fence, but it wasn't. I mean, I hit the ball pretty high, so like, I was halfway around first by the time it happened, and he goes, "Thank Christ that ball bounced over. I mean, I thought you were actually going to fall over and die on your way to second base. And I had no idea I was this slow. Like,
I would break it to you, but you have asthma.
Why do you think it's asthma?
Because this that's is, not normal.
You gaslight so hard.
Because that's not normal.
I had asthma.
No, you know what? I think
I'm
she's
not
right.
Gaslighting.
I think you do
I'm,
have asthma.
I'm a doctor.
Oh, so. Right. Sure. Asthma is a breathing condition. Yeah, I was just
it
fucking
sounds like
slow.
You couldn't breathe.
No, I'm slow. Yeah. I was just
I'm
like,
pretty sure Michelle said the same thing about you.
Right.
She,
yeah.
He has asthma,
yeah.
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, my running fast, it wasn't natural.
Oh, right. It was the HGH.
Remember, it was the HGH as a kid. No, honestly, when I eventually got off it when, you know, I stopped growing.
Yeah.
Which I should have just been like, nah, just keep me on.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Let's keep maybe it, get keep back it, on and see what happens.
I literally got slower. Like it was like, it sure. was a noticeable effect. Like wow. I was like, oh.
Well, you're also smoking a lot of weed.
No, I was not.
Oh, were you?
Not at 18.
Well,
maybe at 25. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
That's funny. That's exactly what I was thinking about. I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, they know. But yeah, so like once I started actually training, obviously I wanted to play ball. So I worked really hard. I was at the track every single day. And I was like getting people to help me. I got lucky. I beat the 8-minute mile without like much training, but I almost died. I literally shot over to the garbage can and puked.
For sure not normal for an 18-year-old athlete.
Well, you're miscategorizing. Like, we were just kids that played sports. Like,
I mean, you're an athletic athlete. Guy.
If you play sports
now,
you grew up playing sports.
That's athletic.
But I played roller hockey and baseball. Like, there isn't a lot of
sprinting
here. There's
not a lot of endurance in these sports that he's talking about.
No, yeah. roller hockey is the fucking most.
Endurance is not an issue.
What I'm saying is, like, in baseball, it's a lot of fast twitch muscles. It's like running to first base. It's not running an entire mile. Like, it doesn't always translate.
The one was, what, 16?
60 yards, yeah.
Yards, that's short.
I just wasn't fat. But the point is like...
What the hell was wrong with you, okay? Yeah, we got to figure this out.
Where were you found that? It's asthma.
There was no condition.
Have you done a nebulizer?
Why did you have that inhaler as a kid?
I'm trying
there we go. It comes out.
I'm trying to explain.
It was fun to gaslight. It's so much fun. Oh my God, I'm going to do it more often.
I'm trying to explain what actually happened here. You guys are just fucking on one. Once I started to train, I was able to shave like tons of time off. So by the time I was running the mile my sophomore year, I was running it in like 6.5. And as a junior, I ran it in 5:43 or something like that. So I was able to take minutes off of my time. And by the time I was a junior, I was running the 60 in like 7.4, 7.5, which is still below average for an athlete, but it's way above average for a college pitcher.
And a half second's a lot. Like,
it's a ton.
Yeah. Why does a pitcher need to run anyway? Why you did pitcher? Because you wouldn't have to run.
No, they stuck me. They stuck me there because I was left-handed, and also I was obviously fucking slow. Yeah. You know, like you're not gonna put me in the outfield. But I think that you know you do have to run a ton for pitching, but it's endurance stuff. So like we would run like 20 miles a week, but you get really good at that. That's so easy to train into.
Slow twitch guy.
Probably. I mean, if I had to guess.
I wonder what Bednar's speed is. A 60-yard dash.
Bro, he's fat. I mean, he's just like straight
he's thick,
up fat.
Okay, he's just thick.
Yeah, that's right? true.
He had a little power behind him.
I will say, I'm surprised to see how much sports have, and I wonder if this is just like a correction for PEDs, but sports have really gone through the process of, in the 80s, nobody lifted weights, and they were all just like naturally athletic and soft looking. Mm-hmm. And then the 90s and 2000s, like people really started pounding the weights and then
out of their mind.
Yeah, and like really taking the jab. And they became like these monster superheroes, right? But like I'm looking at it now, like baseball players had always had this reputation of not being like in great shape, which was bullshit because they would just like point to David Wells and just be like, look, there's a fat guy, or like CC Sabathia is like 300 pounds.
It's always a pitcher.
Fat guys on every football
Cecil
team.
Fielder.
Right. Yeah. So it's like you could always come up with like one example of guys that are the outliers that are fat, but you know, across the board, everybody was in pretty good shape. But then you see them like shirtless, like Neil Walker, Patrick Mahomes is another good example.
Yeah, that was going around.
It's shocking. Like, these guys are all fucking dad
bods.
Remember
that one of Travis Kelce doing the, he was recording like the Christmas album?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got like, a lot for that too.
Ben Roethlisberger is like a big dude, but he has like no definition in his arm. Like, how does he have such a strong arm? There's literally no definition.
That guy didn't lift weights the entire 15 years he was in the league.
Didn't need to.
For sure. Like,
I guess they don't really, like, they use their legs more, right?
Yeah, I mean, if across the board, I'm sure if you measure the leg strength of like athletes, it's probably like
especially pitchers.
Top 1%. Yeah. It's just shocking to me to people who are dedicating their lives to sport that the
That's
notion
unreal.
It's insane. Like, it's insane. This is the best athlete.
But a lot of them
in the
look
world.
Like that. Yeah.
I think Mahomes and I have the same body type.
That's peak male performance.
That is, it is. It's true. It really is. It truly is. It's it's really astonishing to me. And I think that there's like this big misconception that you know, professional athletes look like WWE superstars and like they just
or bodybuilders. Like, that's honestly like not that practical.
Yeah, that's actually true. You know, it's not really all that sharp to be in a 6 month long season and be carrying around 9% body
fat.
Right.
And they're like, they're not lifting for aesthetics, right? They're not trying to like, you know, build up their muscles, their biceps, and you know, they're doing all the stuff strengthening the non-glamour muscles. The,
but you know, they're also not really power lifters unless you're talking about the linemen, right? So like, you would think, just naturally speaking, when you're lifting for strength.
Jalen Hurts squats 600.
Bro, he's a beast. He's a fucking monster. Yeah. There are some other guys that are outliers in that regard where you could just like put them on the cover of a body magazine and they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just eating 5,000 calories
like
a day.
Conrad, if he went to the gym like once every
literally
other week.
Walking past the gym.
he sniffed the gym.
Guys, I don't know what you're talking about, but I went yesterday.
Just show him a picture of some weights and he's like,
right.
He's
what girls are afraid of becoming. Like, oh no, I saw a weight today. I feel bulky. You know, like that's literally Conrad. He like walks by, he just thinks about it, just runs through the mental exercise of like, oh man, what would it be like if I bench press right now and his chest just like, it's a big pump?
He just manifests.
Like,
pump.
Fuck you, man. Why don't you put in a little goddamn effort once in a while?
Yeah, I did like 75 push-ups yesterday.
Did you?
Okay.
Let's go.
In a row?
I mean, no.
Okay, I was going to call that
24-hour period.
No, 25 each.
Remember whenever I was paying you, or I was free-rolling you, I guess, to do 75 hard?
Yeah.
And one of your activities for the day was meditative yoga?
Yeah.
I walk in the fucking living room.
What the fuck do you want me to do?
I walk in the living room. He has his feet against the wall, and he's breathing. And he goes, this is my second workout of the day. I'm like, the fuck is this?
I mean, one of your workouts, you know, sitting in a steamy room.
All right, buddy. So. You go sit in the sauna for 45 minutes.
It does
minutes.
Get your heart rate going, but right I wouldn't it consider it.
Yeah, but you're
like,
still
I
just sitting there.
Put it in place of a workout.
Yeah.
I mean, walking outside counts. Which
I
one?
Wouldn't consider that. Working
I had already
out
did
either.
That.
Well, the premise of 75 hard is like you do one
outdoor
legitimate workout
activity.
And then one outdoor activity. But I was just kind of like, I'm on a time crunch. I'd rather
the
get the sauna.
Be the outdoor activity.
Conrad yeah, that's
working,
what I was counting.
He
it
was
as.
Working his core.
The fuck, he was working nothing. He was working me over, is what he was doing.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I was doing meditative yoga.
Yeah. He's working his brain.
Literally smoking a blunt with his feet against the fucking wall.
I was not.
I'm meditating, bro.
That was part of the thing. I couldn't smoke weed.
Oh, that was part of the thing.
Meditating and medicating.
How long did you last? 10 days? 12 days? Would you have made the whole thing?
Yeah.
Without weed?
Yes.
Without weed, nicotine, anything along those lines?
100%.
I don't understand, like, how...
All right, shut up. Do it again. Right now.
Do it again.
I just don't understand how you can go through that without, like, any level of detox.
Just whatever, man.
your dreams would be crazy.
Anomaly.
You don't need to detox from weed. Maybe no. Nicotine.
Well, nicotine.
Nicotine, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's annoying.
I don't know, man.
It's annoying, yeah.
It's annoying, but, like, whatever.
I was going to say, like...
die.
You smoke a lot. It seems like it would be something.
Not like, you know, getting off of heroin.
It's more like you'll get anxiety, but then if you're working out, that might counteract it.
I feel like if I propositioned to do this, he would just like turn into a full-blown alcoholic.
Yes.
Like he would just be walking around the fifth all day long.
Like,
when did Conrad turn into brown
yoga.
Paper bag,
wait a
man?
Second. I mean, he's got...
I'm saying turning into. This is already...
Doing yoga, drinking a fifth.
Yeah, and then in the robe.
Call it a day. In the robe, Christ. Hasn't worn underwear in like 16 days.
Guys, I always wear underwear.
Oh, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Like, what the fuck?
Okay.
Jesus.
But do you, though? Oh, man. All right. So there was an interesting chop situation that took place at the WPT. Well, it wasn't actually the WPT main, but it was at Thunder Valley. So it was a $1,500 mystery bounty event. They got down to three-handed, and the final three were Nick Papulio. Papilio? Am I pronouncing that right? Papilio. I know Nick. I just can't pronounce it.
Nicky P.
Tony Ma and one of the other Nicky P's. Tony Ma and Elias Travis. So Elias Travis had the chip lead by a pretty sizable amount, I would say. And the big twist to this is that the largest bounty was still in place. So the 25K bounty was still up for grabs. And they were playing for, I think it was around 100K total in the prize pool with the bounty. Well, there was 31K in the bounty prize pool. And yeah, it looks like they chopped for, about 70K to play for between the three spots.
Oh my God, is this another Borgata situation?
No. They were obviously much more aware here.
Okay.
But Nick, being the most experienced of the remaining three, was kind of like just denying the chop in a large way. So, sorry, there was... Okay, I was right. So he was mostly like just kind of poo-pooing the chop. The chip leader had 2.3 million at a big blind of 20K. So over 100 blinds. Tony Ma had around just shy of a million, so about 50 blinds, and Nick had 650K, just over 30 blinds. Like,
and Nick's like, fuck this, let's run this.
Right, so with the big bounty left in play, it's kind of interesting because he's really incentivized to chop if he can get the negotiate
bounty.
It all.
Yeah, right? If you can get the bounty into play, you just have to chop.
Well, they have to chop the bounty prize pool.
Well, I mean, there's ways you can go about things. You can make up your own stipulations to chop. I mean, you could just say, I guess you have to chop. Or you can, they pull them. They pull them and keep them.
Well, nobody's incentivized. I mean, Nick's the only one incentivized to gamble.
Yeah,
why would
the chip leader want to do that?
Like, you're not gonna do an ICM chop for the prize pool and then everybody keeps their bounty and just gets a pool. That's crazy for the chip leader. He has a 2.5-to-1 chip lead.
I mean, that's what happened at Borgata.
Yeah, we know. Like, that was fucking madness. That would obviously never happen again.
Yeah.
But the headline to this is a little bit misleading. Basically, Papulio had already pulled 15K worth of bounties. So he was kind of, I think third place was like 12K. So he was kind of just like basically saying like, I've already made third place money. I don't care. Like, let's run this. I'll gamble with you guys. I feel like I'm the best player left, yada, yada, yada. So ultimately, what ended up happening is they did an ICM chop, and then the chip leader gave Nick somewhere around, how much did he give him of the bounties?
How much in bounties were left?
31K total.
Okay.
So the chip leader says, you don't even have enough to knock anybody out. So 25K would be the max that I'm willing to offer you. And that's more than generous. So that's both the ICM chop and the bounty combined. Which is pretty good because it sounds like he's basically getting a fair distribution of the bounties.
Plus a little more, right? Yeah. Wasn't it 12K for third?
12K was third place money, but the ICM chop for 12K was like 17.
Okay.
So now he's getting like...
slightly less than the... third of the bounty. An average of the bounty.
Right. So with that offer, he would have been getting about 8K
with
bounties.
With a fourth of the stat.
But he actually... And so the final chop numbers were Travis took 35K, Tony Ma took 29.9, and the Papulio took 27.7. So he actually made out pretty fucking good here because it seems like they just ICM chopped everything, like both pools together, which I'm pretty confident. I haven't put a ton of thought into this, but I'm relatively confident that's a huge error because ICM is only weighting where you'll finish.
Not who you bust.
Correct.
Yes,
correct.
You're right. Because like, if you have chips, you're the only person that can get these both bounties.
Exactly. So the ICM model overvalues the short stack.
Yeah.
And in a bounty scenario, the short stack is not totally worthless, but it's worth significantly less.
Yeah, just think about it because like, obviously, the ICM model says like, oh well, if you're in third place, then you can obviously finish second if, you know, if one and two exactly. get tangled together, but you can't bust either one of them.
Correct.
So that's where the difference
is. And more
is.
Importantly, the pay jumps weren't larger than the bounty at play. Mm-hmm. So truthfully, doing an ICM chop here is kind of mad because there isn't really any ICM at play.
Doing anything as a chip leader in these bounties is madness.
No, I mean, there are ways to do it for sure, but like...
There's really not like a model that you could... put together for the bounty, right? Like,
yeah, you could go chip EV.
Yeah, I guess chip EV. Yeah, but even if that, I don't even know if that's...
If you chip chop the bounty pool, yeah. mm-hmm. he would get the lion's share of it. He would get like half the bounty pool.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
Yeah, probably.
It's almost certainly fair.
Yeah.
Right?
So he gave up about half of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he probably fucked himself out of like 10K.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, like... good chance Papula doesn't accept a lesser chop.
It's mm-hmm. good chance Papula just wins the fucking tournament too.
I don't think so, man. I mean, yeah, of course he can win it some of the time, but like you're at a pretty big disadvantage in a spot where nobody, like the big edge that Papula is going to have in most of these three-way scenarios is that he knows ICM better than the other two. But in this particular instance, ICM is absolutely useless.
Yeah, with that chip disparity, he's going to probably have to win at least two flips. Like, I mean, you know, like,
one flip, he's back in it.
One flip, he's back in it, but then he's going to have to win another one.
But not
to,
just,
like,
of course. But not just, it's not what he has to do. It's that his edge gets neutralized because
right.
Unless these guys are totally incompetent, which Tony's not. He's obviously a seasoned vet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the other guy, but like he would have to be a bad chip EV player as a chip leader. Right, mm-hmm. So you're counting on the fact that you're just winning more through chip EV by continuing through. Now you're kind of handcuffed also because if they don't want to offer you a better than fair deal, and you're not playing for significant amounts of money, you are better off just gambling, right? Like just trust that you're gonna pick up on some mistakes or whatever. Any event, it sounds as though Nick and probably Tony to some degree really made out in this chop deal. And the headline was a little misleading because it basically said Nick made the most amount of money, which is true because he already had 15K in bounties.
Right.
So he basically made just shy of 45K, like about 43K, whatever.
Yeah, but that happens all the time in bounty. Bounty events.
That's not really, that has nothing to do with the chop.
Right. Whoever pulls the million is going to make more than everybody in the tournament.
Yeah. Very important though, like stay diligent out there, kids. If you're considering chopping a mystery bounty and the big bounty's left in play, be careful. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of edge that you're probably giving up if you're thinking about this as a normal tournament.
Top against seasoned
right.
people.
Right. When they say no, just move on.
Yeah. Unless you right have, like, you have a liaison or something that's right. going to like.
They're either going to fuck you over at the table by outplaying you or fuck you over in the chop. So
right. At least there's variance poison. At the table.
Yeah.
There's no variance in the chop.
Right. Yeah.
Let's rely a little on luck. Did you guys see this story that's happening in Baltimore?
Yes.
That's crazy.
It's wild.
Insane.
I live under a rock.
Okay, so last night at 1:30 in the morning, East Coast time, a barge...
Oh, my God.
So a barge ran into... What am I hearing right now? What's that? Is the TV on?
Yeah, no, that's the sound from the...
Yeah, but why are we hearing it?
It sounds like it's coming from downstairs.
We're not hearing it in our headphones.
Yes, we are.
Here we are.
It really
I'm not.
It sounded like it was coming from downstairs. That tripped me out.
We're 100% not hearing our headphones. It's either coming out of the TV or out of my monitor.
That was weird.
Okay. Anyway.
What's a barge, by the way?
It was usually trash barges, but this looks like a cargo ship.
It was a cargo ship.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it had lost power, which in turn lost steering.
Oh, no.
And it ran into the... I almost said the Michael Scott Bridge. The Francis Scott Key Bridge.
The Dunder Michael Mifflin. Scott Bridge.
Right.
It's Scranton.
So it ran into the bridge. Luckily, there wasn't a lot of traffic, but apparently there was a construction crew working
on
the bridge.
There was people on there?
So there were six people in a construction crew that were working, and then...
they put out a mayday. The barge or the cargo ship put out a mayday, and they stopped the traffic. And this was early in the morning too, so there was not a lot of traffic. It was like 1 or 2 in the morning or something like that. So once they put out the mayday, they were
like
able to
a
stop.
Generator or something like.
I mean, maybe there's a backup. I don't know, I read that there were 20 cars submerged that they found. Two people had been rescued. One didn't need any attention. Another one was rushed to the emergency. And the latest was that they're still looking for the six men on the construction crew. They haven't been discovered yet. And then also there are supposed to be like 20 submerged cards. They don't know how many people are possibly... The biggest issue is that it's freezing there right now. So it's like minus one. Mm-hmm. And you're not just going to do all that well in the river in, in temperatures like this.
Right.
So yeah, this is like an ongoing story. It's pretty crazy. The
how does that not happen more?
Well, I think so. What they're speculating is that the bridge was like poorly constructed.
Well, there was a ship going through the entire thing. How?
It didn't go through. That's the thing. Like it just it hit one of the pillars.
It hit the pillar,
and it just collapsed the entire bridge.
Yeah. But I mean, that pillar is like
no, of course. But they're basically saying that like in engineering, you would create some sort of
fail-safe. So like, yeah, if it hits that just a piece of it falls, not
or,
the whole thing.
Or like it's able to absorb like. You know, high degrees of impact like this.
Right.
You know, basically the speculation was like, well, what if there was like some major weather disaster?
Yeah.
Right. Like, would it be able to hold up to that?
The ship was only going 8 knots, so it was like going very slow.
Right.
But it's you know heavy, those things are
huge.
Yeah, those
oh,
things
massive.
Are huge and
massive.
They're massive, right? So it's a lot of you know inertia.
Yeah. All things considered, it's relatively fortunate. Considering it wasn't a high traffic, I mean, this is a main vein.
I mean, if this happened during
for people
rush
to get
hour.
From Baltimore through or across the harbor, so it's going to have like long time impacts. Yeah. There's only three ways to get across the harbor, and this was one of them.
Wow!
Like,
so
could you imagine
have
if that
an issue? Yeah, like traffic.
They already
if that
had
happened
an issue
at 9 in the morning.
Oh
like,
yeah,
and then the bridge was like completely
catastrophic.
Filled. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it would just be like such
sorry,
a massive
I'm gonna
tragedy.
Stop driving over.
Do you have that option? Okay.
Not here.
Wow. Or I
now,
mean,
here we'd have obstacle courses that they just put cones everywhere for no reason.
Trust me, I'm very certain that there's no bridges here. I've looked before.
I was gonna say there's no bridges here, guys. Don't worry, we're clean.
I get too clear-headed by the time I drive all the way to the Hoover Dam.
No, here we
like,
just all have right,
turn
we
around.
Just have like 8-story parking garages. Like
that's true.
Yeah, that's no way to go out. A bridge. That's what a man does.
Jesus Christ, Conrad.
Guys ready to go on a cruise?
Yeah. I hope we don't run into any bridges.
As long as there's no bridges.
I think we'll be okay.
That's soon, huh?
Yeah. It's
I got a pack or something.
I didn't even upload my passport yet.
I just oh wait, I have to upload a passport?
Yeah, in the app.
Oh, hey, while you know what we're talking about, when are we boarding this thing? I put the last
you get a choice.
You get a choice.
I don't know why they did that. Like Sam's like, what time do you want to board? I'm like,
so wait,
I
you didn't upload your passport, but you have a boarding time.
It wasn't me.
Sam's diligent. He actually uploaded.
He was like, because he was wiring money, and then he was doing all the emails.
Knowing who I'm going with, I pick the latest time.
Okay,
that's right. which is 3:30.
I'm like,
it was like, yeah, they. Literally
why are you giving us an option? Just tell us when to get off.
Right. It was like 1:45, 3, and 3:30. So. Yeah. Not like that big of a difference.
Right.
I think we did the
I'll be watching the Buccos.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Today's the last day to wire. So if he hasn't sent his
yet.
Wait. Is that when you say that's just wire? Not like the credit card thing you can do?
Credit card you can do on the ship.
It's just up to $3,000 per transaction.
Yes.
Right?
I won't need more than that. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. So for anybody who's attending, you can get money on through a wire. Today's the last day to do so if you want to do that. You can bring a credit card up to $3,000 per transaction.
So you can do $3,000, then $3,000.
I'm not sure of that, but I would assume yes.
Yeah.
Given that like the main is a $5,000 event.
Right.
I have like $40 in my bank account and like all my money's in those.
Yeah, do they take the Phantom Wall in?
Yeah, can we
they don't take crypto, but if there are any euros on there that load with Luxon Pay, you can swap.
Hmm.
So you can swap crypto to them for Luxon.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Within Luxon.
Yeah, so basically like they do take Luxon and Luxon handles crypto, but not in America.
See, I just use it. I buy gift cards on this like site. I use crypto to buy gift cards, and then I.
Why are you self-reporting?
Is it bad?
It's not bad. It's just you know.
It's not large amounts.
Okay,
it's
that's
just
good.
Like if I want to load up my DoorDash.
Right.
You know?
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Or Amazon gift card. I just got a laptop with.
Yeah. The. The number one money laundering site in the world, Amazon gift cards.
I'm going to get all these callers now like, hey, we need a Target gift card.
Shout out to Marley.
You're hacked. Yeah.
That story is so impeccable. She needs to tell it more in more public spaces, though it's very embarrassing.
5 Target gift cards.
Have you, this will interest you the most, I think, Melissa. Have you seen the expose on Huber Daddy?
I did see a little, but I need to be filled in. I only saw like the headline of the article you guys sent about how he was sleeping with, and then Landon said Huber Daddy fucks. I'm guessing he's fucking.
So I didn't get to actually read the whole article, but I saw snippets of it that were posted online, and apparently it was just like a massive hit piece done by the New York Magazine, maybe.
Sex? What's wrong?
So apparently
Chad ramming his fans like a G? Colty bra. That's so fitting, though.
Oh, man, it's so good. So basically, like, the long and short of the article is that Huberman's just a well-sought-after man.
I mean, obviously, like...
Right. It's like he's intelligent. He's in great shape.
This is the whole thing about, you know, like, daddy, how the top... You know? What is it? There's, like, that...
Oh, like the top 1% get...
Yeah, and then so the top, like, attractiveness guys kind of just, like, don't settle down because they have the whole D at their fingertips.
Right. That's the lie I tell myself.
Like, you are top 1%.
You're goddamn... You're a single
guy? Is he married?
He's single.
Yeah, he's single.
Well,
he's single, then
why is he not single, Guapo. He has six ladies.
I think if they're okay with it, then who cares?
Well, I don't think they're not okay. I think the implication was that they don't know about one another.
Well, everyone has their vices, right? You don't trust a man without a vice.
I mean, yeah, and like, look,
his GX.
This is a weird thing to expose. So like, who knows what kind of relationships they've cultivated? And of course, like, if he's being deceitful, that's never a great thing. But also, it's like,
might not be his girlfriends. He might be like casually
situationships.
Dating. Yeah, they're on his roster. I mean, who doesn't want to be on Huber Daddy's roster? Right. I mean, I don't. Right. But like, there's also, I'm sure he's.
Who doesn't? I mean,
not me. But
one of the snippets was like that. He had left. I think he was in Northern California, maybe Sacramento or something. I don't know. And he had flown to LA to meet one of his girlfriends. And then he had met with another girlfriend at a coffee shop to try to work things out.
All right. All at the same time.
I mean, look, happens. Man, my takeaway from this is this man is impeccable at organization. I mean, if you can juggle.
But like, can you imagine like, having a one-night stand with Huberman and he like wakes up and he's like he's just like staring at the sun when you wake up and he's like and you're like, did we get coffee? And he's like, I have to wait 90 minutes. And like, it's like, you know,
that's
it would
the
be
best
weird.
Part of this tweet is like, oh, thank God. I thought he was drinking coffee 10 minutes after waking up.
He's like, just like, he's like, I've already done a cold plunge and sauna. And she's just like, what's happening?
I mean, I don't have to imagine it. Yes, I understand. It like, would be I feel bizarre. For the guy. Like, this is the way some of us operate. You know, you have the set regimen. Honestly, like,
the 90 minutes thing's great. I started I started doing that, and it's like, I feel like I don't have a crash. I just feel like much better throughout the day.
Look, I don't want to like self-report on myself too much, but there are for sure situations where I've passed on hanging out with someone because it was teetering on getting too late.
That's like, just because you don't like them.
Well, I don't like anybody, but my...
If you like someone,
like
that would be
a month,
thing.
No,
but
my
more.
Bigger point is, like, when I know that, like, my sole goal for the next day is wake up at 7 a.m. and over the next 2.5 or 3 hours, I'm going to accomplish these things that are very important to me. At 10:30, when it's really close, like, I have 90 minutes between now and when I fall asleep... I'm not going to entertain shit because the end result of that is like at midnight me saying, hey, I'm going home.
I bet Huber Daddy even sometimes, you know,
well,
goes
yeah.
into 1 a.m. Maybe yeah, really I mean, likes her.
You know, he hits the snooze button here and there. Yeah. But I bet he still knocks out that regiment in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what he's not doing. He's not sipping coffee with the lady they just spent the night with.
No, they're not having coffee in bed. He's like standing up like naked at the window, like staring into the distance.
Yeah, maybe 80 minutes after he wakes up.
No, she's right. He's ass naked in front of a full blown window pane, absorbing the sun, and then doing cock push ups afterwards.
Yeah, and he's like, he's like doing weird shit. She's like sneaking out. She's like, I don't know what the hell that guy is doing. That's weird. You'll never believe this guy.
Imagine the pillow talk. Like, he just rolls over, looks at her. He's just like, did you know that if you program yourself to do hard things, the brain actually changes?
Yeah. It's like, should we do something hard right now?
Would you like the cold plunge with me?
I'm feeling like I need to just challenge myself right now. Are you feeling that with me? Like, no, I don't want to go to sleep.
Six girlfriends, man.
I feel like, I have a feeling it's more of a casual thing.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of girlfriends to keep. One girlfriend is a lot of work.
Well, tell me about
not
it.
Just that, but like, not just one. Not just is one girlfriend a lot of work, but like one episode of the Huberman podcast is a lot of work. He talks about like how he'll research for weeks to get an episode out. It's like, when are you fucking six girls in between all of that?
Yeah, that's why it has to be like casual.
Yeah.
There's no way this.
I think he like sets a window aside, you know? It's like, okay, from 8 p.m. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., we can entertain.
And it's like 11 on the dot, like a alarm starts blaring and it's like, time to cold plunge. And he's like, sorry, you have to leave.
Or he's like, he's like texting with them, and at like 11 p.m. on the dot, they just go ghost.
Yeah.
Like,
it just goes, this person has their notifications
right. There were a lot of really funny tweets that were coming off of it, but one of them was like, imagine the shock and horror when the magazine finds out that Huberman's audience has just doubled by a bunch of guys who are trying to find out the secret to success.
It's not much of a hit piece. Like, no. Between that and the what's going on?
Now that I'm hearing. Okay. I don't know if the audience is hearing
that. I don't think we have the rights.
We're not going to get demonetized for 5 seconds. Come on.
Do you know how demonetization works?
I do. I wrote the book.
I don't think you did.
You wrote it.
You don't get 5 seconds for free. This isn't like a sample of, you know, some sort of like CD or whatever the fuck we used to do back in the day.
We just lost like 150.
iTunes. We get the preview iTunes. Yeah. You know,
we lost $37.
We lost Guapo just cost us
$37.
Unbelievable. All right, lunch is on Guapo.
Lunch is always on Guapo. What are you talking
about? Unbelievable.
All right, let's. Do you want to do In the Muck yet, or do you want to do the main talking point? Let's do In the Muck.
All right, In the Muck. All right, we are back in the muck. We got another user submission. This comes from a friend of Sulfur Wise, done some work for us. He's gone through the academy, good old friend Joe Berg. So he's playing down at Resorts World. Now, this is actually a 1-3 with a button straddled to 6. The software didn't allow for that, so bear with me.
Here we are.
So Under the Gun limps. Joe decides to make it $32. He had like $320 to start the hand from Under the Gun 1 or Gun 8,
really big,
if you will. and the button, the straddler, calls.
Remember, as Joe the covered. Button's 6. It's a button straddle.
Right, it's a button straddle, yeah. So that's why the open is big.
5X?
I mean, yeah, 5X over a limp.
I mean, the limp,
the limp
was for $6.
I
don't know why you didn't put it in a 6.
I know.
I didn't realize there
right.
was a limp.
Because I just hit limp, and that's why.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so everyone else folds, and they go heads up to a flop of Queen of Spades, 10 of Diamonds, 7 of Spades. Joe flops an open-ender with his Jack 9 of Hearts. He decides to lead about 40% pot, 30 into 71. And he's met with a raise to 75, and this is where he was unsure of. This is kind of where he's in the muck, right? Because he has a hand that has obviously equity, right? He's got an open ender, and so he thought that he kind of thought that like, well, this small raise doesn't show that much strength, but yet also, you know, if the button has a weaker hand, then he's like, I don't think he would. Like if he's bluffing, it doesn't feel like a bluff either.
I want to say
so.
I was just gonna say that this always feels like strength.
Yeah,
like, this is strong as fuck.
The IP Rays mm-hmm. live is on flop is yeah. like
the min click so, or the min click plus a little.
Right. It's like disgustingly weighted towards sets.
Yeah. So he kind of he felt like, well, you know, if I call here, then like I'm almost certainly going to check the turn, and then it just sets up like a kind of like a pot size shove for the button, and now he's not gonna be able to realize his equity. So he decided to go ahead and just pile all in. And so the button, he said the button went into the tank for like 2 to 3 minutes and eventually called with ace queen and held.
Okay.
He said, and the button said, I was really afraid you had kings. So
well,
like he was obviously trying to
with ace queen then.
Right. So he was trying to represent like, you know, his best hands, right? Ace queen, aces, kings.
Yeah.
So these types of hands. I don't know. These are tricky situations for me as well. When you like face aggression where you have, you know, some sort of equity and how to proceed. I think I
like low SPRs.
Yeah, I think I would have continued probably with a call, but that's just me.
I think we never see folds here.
Because you just don't like, right.
Can't fold.
Yeah. No.
He's talking about from the aggressor.
I'm talking about from the button.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Like, we're never going to see a fold from the
button.
After he raises. Never. So, like, and it's a cheap price. Yeah.
So he's not raising to fold.
Joe's kind of like, you know, he said like, if he shoves the turn, then I don't get to realize equity. But like, what if he just checks? What if he checks back? Like, he's not always shoving the turn, right? And sometimes you just get there on the turn. And there's like, I think, yeah, when you just pile, there, I don't know if there's enough.
But if he shoves on the turn, you don't have enough to call with anyway. So if it's a brick, so
yeah,
it's
it
just
like doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah. But exactly. Like, exactly. You're just not getting right. You're just not getting the right price, and it's like, hey, you get blown off your equity.
Price we're getting on flop is a fucking high five. We just we're like, oh yes, look at this.
Exactly.
And then turn
exactly.
When you get the right
price.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you just fold on turn.
Right. Exactly. That's kind of how I felt.
And I would have went probably a little smaller on flop.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was wondering if we
go ahead.
We do c-bet flop.
Oh, we definitely c-bet.
We're c-betting.
You're open-ended. Okay. I mean,
well, it's not just the hand.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking range-wise. Like,
I mean, when you're out of position, you do check a lot.
Yep. This is a good board for us.
But yeah, exactly. Okay. It's a
good.
You
board have to remember
us,
the button is defending a big blind range.
Right. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So
is it
like range small?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this is a clear 2E spot.
Right. And Joe also, he did acknowledge that the button would most likely have a much wider range than just like a button call because he is the straddler.
Right. So the button, in my opinion, when the button's the straddler, you effectively just treat him as a straddle or like somebody completing out of the straddle. So we would give him a straddle range or a big blind range, whatever you want to call it, which makes this a much higher c-bet frequency board texture.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to smash this board. He's going to miss this board a lot.
He'll have like under pairs.
He'll have under pairs. He'll have just blatant misses. Yeah. He'll have ace highs that will struggle to realize their equity. But he has position on us, so there is that aspect that we want to neutralize. And because the vast majority of hands that flop equity for us here are willing to play for stacks, I think it's just a clear 2E spot. We have very polar decisions.
What's SPR on flop?
4. So 2E is going to be pot. So like we're not c-betting sixes.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't have to. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you like split pot and check.
Yeah, I think we would like mix between pot and check. Probably we're going to check more than we pot, but I think I would only bet the size of 2E. Jack 9 of hearts, I think, functions really well as a check because we unblock back doors, we unblock front doors, we can't really deny those equities. And getting raised fucking sucks.
Yeah,
bad.
That makes a lot of sense checking. I like that.
Right. Now, to be fair, like if we pot, the only raise is jam. That's all the more reason why I think we would just be checking Jack 9 suited.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what size you choose, getting raised sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
I think Ace Queen would have a very easy shove if we potted into him. And obviously, like, he wouldn't see it that way because he's afraid that we have kings.
Yeah.
But he's just afraid of the hand that beats him. Like, we should be happy potting with, like, Queen Jack suited here. I think that, as played, jamming is a torch. It's just a tremendous error here. I agree with Conrad's assessment. We're not going to see a lot of folds here. And more importantly, like, we just have to have hands that are happy to call and then fold. I think jamming King Jack is much better.
I don't think, like, I don't think we ever see a fold here. Not even like just a little bit, like, ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think him tanking with ace queen means much.
Yeah, no, it means shit.
Right. It was like a funeral for his hand.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's probably bottom of his raise.
Hey, he's just not going to raise king queen. Yeah. He's just going to bluff catch with it.
Yeah. It was like a nit roll.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And we understand that, like, people are just pretty under bluffed in general. Mm-hmm. Especially on a texture like this. Like, what are they bluffing? 8-9?
Right.
It doesn't make sense. So I would rather bet fold 8-9. Actually, you can't bet fold it, but I guess. Yeah. I mean, I would just be very polar. Like, I would be bet getting it in with like 8-9 of diamonds, 8-9 of spades, jack-9 of diamonds, jack-9 of spades. Same thing with like the king jacks. If I ever had king jack off, I would lean on having a spade. That way I can comfortably barrel or just get it in. Betting king jack feels a lot better because, or even like as played, bet three bet jamming king jack is a lot better because the over is just live.
Right. Yeah.
Right, like at least some of the time, maybe not always, but at least some of the time, we have a lot more blocking power over king queen and queen jack, which could sometimes play raise. That's all very important. Analyzing the spot that actually has him in the muck though is post mistake, right? So
right.
Betting for too small and then facing a small raise, this is where we actually have to go into analysis mode. And generally speaking, I tend to agree with Conrad that I don't think we're going to see a lot of folds here. So you should take the exploitative response and not jam things that don't have showdown value.
Right.
So you should just be jamming your highest showdown value that needs protection. So I wouldn't jam aces with a spade.
What about like ace x of spades?
I don't think you need to.
Yeah.
Because it can just call. Right? Maybe. I would even be hesitant to jam like high low. I just wouldn't be c-betting those hands. If I had like ace, deuce of spades, I just wouldn't c-bet.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Right? So it's mostly just going to be combo draws anyway. Yeah. And they can just call. If I have ace jack of spades, like, whatever, man. We're running this anyway, and I'm not trying to fold out whatever the fuck it... Like, if you somehow have ace king here, no spade, and you're playing raise fold, I can't know that. You're supposed to just 3-bet pre, and the times that you don't, like, I don't know that you're...
a nothing hand.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. I have so much equity. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I would probably mostly play... just bet call with hands that don't need protection, such as nut flush draws, aces with a spade, things of that sort. And then I would just like play bet 3-bet get it in with like ace queen plus. So when I have 10x of spades, again, just bet call. When I have queen jack, king queen, just bet call. Reason for this isn't just because we want to protect our bet calling range, because we're clearly saying we're being exploitative in our response. It's because he doesn't always have to follow through with the jam on the turn.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things can happen on this board that change. And now all of a sudden, like, the turn is just an offsuit 9. We have queen jack and it goes check, check, because ace queen is now afraid of everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or a spade.
Yeah, or a spade.
Or there's just like a lot of positive things that can happen to our showdown value region as well as our drawing region when we just choose to play call, because this small size here, maybe we'll see it happen a little bit in theory. But I imagine he's just supposed to pick like a 2E size himself so that he could just be all in on turn. And that size is going to be somewhat larger than this.
Yeah, like this size doesn't really do anything to the hands that we're going to bet.
It's kind of just an inducing type of raise, which is not a thing.
He doesn't want to see the rest either. Right. He's like, let's get it in here.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those raises where it's like, I'll call off if you jam, but otherwise I'm just trying to buy streets. Like whenever you raise small on the turn to check back river kind of thing. Mm. But it's like, if you get jammed on, you're also just going to call it off now.
Right.
That type of stuff. So I think that, like, you know, this is just, I think two things are happening here. I think mechanically we missed, but that's okay. You're not gonna nail the 2E spots here. This is somewhat complex because you're actually playing, middle position versus, or I guess you're playing gun eight. My apologies. under the gun 8 versus a big blind range that's actually in position. So that's gonna be difficult to suss out in real time. And I'm not even sure it's correct. That's just my personal guess looking at it. So you're gonna miss mechanically. Like, whatever. B40 here in a normal situation would be okay, but you probably should just default to checking. The bigger issue is the response, right? So once the mechanical error takes place, now we have a theoretical error occurring. we're too concerned with realization when SPR is lowered. We're out of position and low SPRs benefit us. So take as many streets as possible, because any improvement, you're going to continue. If you turn a jack, a nine, like whatever, you're going to continue in some capacity. You're also going to have the capability of playing some leads. So let's look at this from the wizard standpoint really quickly. We'll actually analyze it as played, but not look at the jam response, because that's not going to be all that important. Let's instead look at what happens if he does play call. So in a single size strategy, I was right. He's going to be playing 2E here. He does get to play a little bit of just 4X pot jam. You see this a little bit on the Broadway, the Jack 10, Queen 10. Less on Jack 10 7, I think, more Jack 10 6. I don't think you want to open pot jam when there's available straights. So that's why you're seeing it on like Queen 10 7. And you know, they're exactly what you would think it would be. It's the really high equity gut shots, the top pair of top kickers, and the kings. These all a byproduct of needing protection. Then you fill it in with like King Jack that wants to realize this equity. You can see it's choosing hearts and clubs because it's not front door, back door. So when we analyze Jack 9 suited, okay, it's exactly the opposite of what I suspected. Spades and diamonds are pure checking. Hearts and clubs are doing some betting.
25%?
Yeah. So the candidate itself mostly plays check. Let's see what happens when it gets jammed on if Jack 9 calls off. I would guesstimate that it probably folds. Facing pot? Yeah, okay, so it pure folds. That makes sense. So basically, this is going into our bet fold range, as is Jack 8. Jack 8 makes a lot more sense, and you can see now it's almost pure with the heart club candidates. Right, this is just going to be one of our natural double barrels if he allows us to. Otherwise, like, we're happy to just fold to a jam here because, you know, we're against really high equity hands.
Why is it Jack 8 and not Jack 9?
Jack 9 is too much equity.
Okay.
It's drawing to an open ender. So it's live to the nuts two ways, or semi-nuts two ways, where Jack 8 is literally just drawing to a dirty 9. He could just have King Jack and we're dead anyway. So we're just trying to apply pressure to, like, middling pairs like 10x, 7x. His ace highs, whenever he has ace jack, we're trying to put him in really difficult spots in that situation. If we add a second size, he chose 40% pot, is that right?
About that, yeah.
All right.
71.
Whoops.
70, 75.
And big one. My bad. Okay, so yeah, 43% pot. Give or take. Let's see how often this chosen. Okay, so about 20% of the time. And you can see the Jack 9 actually does start to bet a lot more often whenever we put the smaller size in there. I'm sure if we eliminate the large size altogether, which it sounds like he wasn't really even thinking about it, so maybe that's reasonable, we'll probably start to see Jack 9 get pretty close to pure betting. Yep. Yeah, so like now you see we basically range bet whenever we start to reduce it. And this is just based off of how wide in position is. It's crazy, though, because now when we go from a 2E strategy backwards to a small strategy, we go from betting like, you know, a little over a third of the time to almost having a pure range bet, which drastically alters the global strat. Because like in real time, just freestyling the strategy here, I would play a heavy big bet check strat.
Yeah,
I would never range bet this board.
Right,
just wouldn't even cross my mind.
Right,
like we're just too in trouble. I would say
I would just never big bet it, just because like.
I think in practice I'm checking this
a lot. I'm checking a lot. Like
same.
I'm also rage betting a lot. Like
you can't do both.
I'm probably half 50-50.
So you're not, that's range, not range betting.
You're right. I'm not range betting. I didn't mean to say that.
So you're splitting.
I meant
it.
To say I'm C-bet.
C-betting. Like 50%. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, you could still do 2E betting half your range. Or betting 50% of the time. Like it's not, it's much closer to correct. If we're betting 38% of the time or whatever for 2E, your margin of error there is lower than if you're choosing the small size half the time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I would suspect that we're losing a little bit of EV taking this line because in my opinion, it probably complicates the strategy quite a bit. We do see that this small raise comes through. Never comes through. And that's probably the reason why the small bet strategy exists as a range bet, because we just don't expect to ever get raised.
But you locked us to have that size on flop, or that's the recommended size?
The recommended size is 2E.
Okay.
When I gave it two sizes, it chose 40 some of the time. And then when I reduced it back down to one size of only 40, because Joe probably wasn't thinking big, it just defaults basically to a range bet. I wouldn't even know how to begin painting this. So like we can just lock for the small size until like ace queen gets in there. Okay, so let's get ace queen in there a lot more.
Oh, okay. Man. Ace queen.
I mean, it's one of the first ones it chooses. Okay, so this is what it looks like if we ace queen in there half the time.
These underpairs.
Yeah, they're just yeeting it.
They're going off.
Well, it's because the raise size is so small.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then it'll probably just choose TE from that point forward. Okay, so we do play jam here 62% of the time. So way more often than I thought. But Jack 9 doesn't really get in there, and never the candidates that we're talking about.
Really in the weeds here, too.
Right? So our intuition was correct. It's only going to jam. Man, that's so nice. I was like, I would jam the back door, and it jams the back door.
Right.
So it's only going to jam front door, back door. It's never going to jam the ones that unblock those, because you can just be getting free rolled. Mm-hmm. It does do it with the 10X, but that's just a realization thing. The board's going to deteriorate, and 10-9 is probably just good enough
at this point. Yeah, you have showdown.
Right. So, like, kind of as I said, I said it was exploitative, but like it's actually just kind of theoretically correct. Like 10-9 of spades, pure call. Jack 10, obviously a little bit different. It's kind of interesting to me because this hand blocks bluffs.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more curious to me as to why. I guess like you just fuck him anytime he raises 8-9. That's probably some part of it. Now 8-9's not really in there.
Is it ace jack?
Ace-Jack's almost suited. Pure. Yeah, it's almost a pure call, and we block Ace-Jack of spades.
Weird.
Maybe that's why, because we block Ace-Jack of spades.
Yeah.
That probably, but it's all Jack-10 suited.
Right, that's the weird part.
It's basing this off of equity. It just has enough equity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, this is a response. Remember, this is a response to a range that's not supposed to raise us.
You turn a lot of straight draws with that hand.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So, bear in mind, like, our response is predicated off of facing a range that's never supposed to raise. So, of course, we get to play a lot more aggressively. And you can see that it's pulling a lot of jams here. So, Joe was a little bit off in his candidate choice. This is just a pretty happy call. But the concept was kind of okay. You do want to play a lot of jams here. Now, coincidentally, like, it's value jamming pretty thin, right? So, it's jamming, like, Queen-Jack off. It's jamming Jack-10 off, Jack-10 suited. He's probably not finding these jams, right? Right. So, like, finding those bluffs aren't really great.
These are hard ones to find.
Yeah.
I mean, this is because you're getting, like, the range is so wide because of the flop bet. So it's like you find more buffs.
Well, it's also a byproduct of, like, look what he's raising to balance the queen X, right? Like, he has, like, king six suited. Like, that's just not happening.
Yeah.
King six of spades, sure. But, like, king six of diamonds, probably not playing raise. King five, not playing raise. You know what I mean? So basically, like, the issue is if we were to actually lock this for what we think the raising range is, it's going to be way too nutted. Right. And now all of a sudden, we may just respond by playing pure call.
Yeah. And in practice, it is way too nice.
Exactly. So I think the best way to analyze this looking forward is like what happens when we call. And let's say we turn a pair. Oh, wait. We didn't have clubs.
So let's say the Steelers signed Cordell Patterson.
Don't tease me.
2-year contract.
Don't you fucking tease me, man.
They got him, man.
We're out here making moves. Okay. So Jack 9's still going to play pure check. But you do see that we have a lot of leads all in. And it's going to be a lot of our traps because the board's starting to deteriorate and can only get worse from here. So, like, our 10s that trapped, our queens that trapped, our queen X that improved. So, queen 9, queen jack, our queen 8 that trapped. I guess it didn't trap, but it improved. So, basically, anything that's, like, pair plus now leads all in. The reason why everything else is checking and it looks so largely unprotected with the exception of aces, which actually isn't even that strong of a hand anymore, and like maybe king queen king jack, the reason why all of these hands are checking is because so much of them are just going to fold. So it's just going to be a very polar response to the jam. Like king queen king jack snaps it off, jack nine almost certain to just fold.
Yeah, all the dog shit just
right. So now in position, you can see he's going to mix between 2e, which is 40%, and all in. Actually, it might not even be 40, or it might not even be 2E. Yeah, it's a little larger than 2E, just a smidge. But anyway, he's going to play a mix between bet and jam. Bet is fine when we have Jack 9, we're probably going to call. Yeah, you can see we play almost pure call with the exception of Jack Nine of Spades. When he jams, I suspect those hands are just starting to fold. Wow, no. Oh, sorry, we turned a pair.
Yeah.
We turned a pair, my bad. My bad. So we turned a pair with Jack Nine. So obviously it's just going to call it off. It has enough equity to do so. And you can see that's true of just about everything with the exception of King Nine. So King Nine of Spades calls, everything else is going to fold. So the open ender greater than the kicker in this particular instance, right?
Yeah.
We just have more equity holding the jack than we would with the king. That should be pretty intuitive. And that's also a byproduct of like what hands are jamming here. Not really a lot in the way of bluffs. It's going to be like the king four of spades. It's pretty much all spade draws. And then like, you know, some of the open ender plus pairs, which we now beat, like jack seven. So all in all, Joe, you kind of fucked up a little bit. You're a little in the muck.
But I think the big takeaway is that those IP raises on flop in low stakes, especially, like, are just so weighted towards value that you're not going to really fold out anything with equity.
Also,
ever.
Just peel a card, mate. 45 to win fucking piles. Peel
well, the
a
big,
card,
the
mate.
Big, the big thing to touch on what Melissa just said is there's a simple reason for that. They play no raise in theory.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? So in a spot that has no aggression, what's the first hand that you're going to choose?
I've paid that off so many times. You know, like and that's why I know these because I've paid them so many times.
Just pay.
Right.
That it just like you get like a PTSD reaction when you see the IP, the little raise on flop and it's like, oh my God, you have a set.
Yeah. Oh
well, especially God. when you have a lot of equity.
Yeah.
Right, like you're drawing to the nuts, so it's especially frustrating because it's
I'd rather have that than like kings there.
Yeah, you also have to kind of ask yourself, like, what was the purpose of the bet to begin with, right? And to be fair, when he's betting small size, it's like, well, the simple purpose is just driving equity
because
most of your range is going to be pretty equity dense, and it's just going to play fine if he doesn't play any raises. But if he doesn't know, if you don't know what you're supposed to do here, which is big bet, and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do as a response, which is call, now all of a sudden, like, we're out on this limb. Where when he does things that are disincentivized, we kind of get fucked because of it, specifically with these types of holdings. So, you know, it becomes this thing where it's like, well, there are easier paths on the exploitative realm. Because truth of the matter is, like, of course, we want to drive equity, and that's why we're betting. But the secondary response is, how much fold equity do we actually possess here? Maybe not that much, you know? Yeah, we're getting all of his trash to fold, but, like, we have a pretty high equity hand versus trash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He has ace, deuce, no spade. And we suddenly aren't, or we're like not that worried about denying that hand its equity, you know?
King X trash just gets fucked when he turns a king.
Yeah. And like you know, whatever. If we sometimes lose the hand because we delay and barrel turn river, Godspeed. Like that's poker, you know? Right. You gotta play the game a little bit. Man, I gotta tell you, Oh, these guys get me so fucking fired up in the chat.
What are they saying?
They get me so fucking fired up.
Are they like talking dirty to you or something?
I'm done with Berkey's out of touch commentary. It stakes he hasn't played in years. But I will fucking come mop.
I think it's time for a chat.
Get down there, bro.
Yeah,
get down there.
Berkey's going to go fucking,
I'm going to put in 100 hours at 2.5 and just like mop these motherfuckers.
I'm here for it.
Should.
I can't breathe.
Sid, he's coming for your ass.
I just can't breathe because it's just like you're playing in the softest pool in the fucking world and you think that I can't go down and just absolutely mash these motherfuckers.
I don't think that's what he's saying.
What's
he
saying?
That's what he's saying.
No.
And I think he's saying that. I think he's saying you're small.
Yeah.
I think he just called you like small, scrawny, and weak. Yeah.
Wow. He just said 1-3 crossbook.
Please.
Do you even lift, bro?
I think, honestly, if anybody
would be willing to crossbook me a large number at like 1-3 live, I would love to waste my fucking time in fucking red chip hell.
That would be pretty fun sweat for
the fucking jewel.
I'm gonna have to figure something out where I get like action on the side or something because
who would give you action on that?
Probably a lot of people. People think I stink.
What's the bet that you win over it? X amount of money or hourly or?
No, I would just crossbook with it. Well, no, so there's no way they think I'm losing.
They can't think I'm losing.
No way,
they
right? do.
I would like crossbook over a certain win rate, maybe.
Crossbook and give them
like
a price.
I would spot them like five big blinds an hour.
Oh, okay, Landon.
Okay.
Something like that. Wow. And then I get to crossbook everything thereafter.
Perkins is on the phone right now.
For the right price, I would. I mean, I would fucking grind that.
We would need a vlog.
2,000 hours.
You'd have to vlog that.
Right.
Yeah.
With Mama Joe amazing. There too. Oh man.
Well, think of it. All right. Think of it like this. Like, so say somebody wants to crossbook me at like 1-3, no limit. Where is it $500 at? The Wynn?
At the Wynn, it's $600.
There's 2-5 at Bellagio that's capped.
No. I don't want to play 100 big blind.
It's 600 at the Jewel and 500 at the Wynn.
Okay, so.
And I think there's a 2-4 game that's 600 at Venetian.
Okay, so let's say that I get to play a $600. Let's say that the bet ends up being like I get to play a maximum of a $600 buy in. Whatever stakes it is, it could be anything from 1-2 to 2-5. So I get to play a max buy-in of $600, and I spot them.
Well, you can only buy in for $600, or the game.
The game is capped at $600, yeah. Right? So let's say that the bet ends up working out where I spot them $10 an hour. So 1.5 blinds an hour.
Yeah.
Well, no, not necessarily.
That's like 3 blinds.
It depends on the stakes. It could be 3 blinds. It could be 2 blinds.
Yeah.
But whatever. Okay. So let's say I spot them $10 an hour, and I play 1,000 hours. So I'm spotting them $10,000 on my win rate. Then we crossbook everything thereafter. In 1,000 hours, how much could I win to make it worth my time? Like, I would have to do like 1,000%.
You have to make
crossbook.
Up 10K.
No, that's a given.
I mean, if you won like
a pittance.
Yeah, but this other person is playing
like
as well.
If you won like 40K and you crossbooked 10X.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, could I win? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, could I win 40K
in 1,000 hours?
So I win, yeah. And I just 10X that. So now I win 300K.
Yeah.
Man, I can do.
You could do that.
Yeah, but I'm still taking a
Let's get Berkey in the fucking, and then the mic.
I want to go sit that game.
Like, Berkey, you know what? Here's the thing. If you do this, I'll give you that micro shirt back.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Oh, that just
raises stakes. And you can wear that.
Thank you, Brian.
You can wear that down at the
Quite honestly,
1-3 game.
If I had a melee, I would crossbook you here just for shits and giggles and watch you in hell.
The thing is
that would be funny, yeah.
You'd make a lot of friends along the way.
The problem is one, I would be very, very miserable.
Exactly.
Misrag. You'd be a misrag.
We would hear so many bad beats and hand histories.
It would be tough.
It would be tough for everyone involved.
Honestly,
we would need
like,
a cut.
He would be like Marley in the fucking straitjacket.
I would pay so much for this.
A big problem with
they
this.
Only fucking have it.
A big problem with this bet would be that like I may only stand to win like 200,000 or 300,000 if I were able to get 1,000% crossbook in. And on top of that, I would have to pay Elliot Rowe 50K on retainer.
1,000%.
Yeah, 10X.
You would have to pay Elliot Rowe 50K.
So I'd have to pay Elliot Rowe 50K on retainer to keep me sane, which now drops my win rate down to 250K.
You're kind of proving their point here. Like, you need Elliot Rowe to beat 1-3.
No,
like,
not to me.
No, this is for the counseling of all the...
Yeah, this is just to keep me from fucking
we
turning
need Elliot
to
Rowe cliff. For
right.
listening to you.
Right.
you need to get it for your room.
Think and all then, the in the muck segments would have.
And then also, I have to assume that I couldn't do better than $250 an hour playing anything else, which or $300 an hour, whatever, which I absolutely am smashing that. So it's like, I just need to figure out a way to incentivize myself. And that's even assuming I could get somebody to take action on that. Right?
Oh, you can
right.
always find somebody that wants to see you in complete misery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I don't know. This feels like a 30-day water fast bet.
I think a fair amount
me.
Of people would like bet that you would want to quit, though.
Oh, that's a good bet. Yeah. That's a really good
yeah.
bet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you quit, then you just have to pay
yeah, that's
a
really good
amount.
Bet.
Then you have to pay a certain amount.
I think that the problem is that... maybe it's not a problem. Maybe people just think I'm really that bad. But like, you would have to be such a fucking whale to think that over 1,000 hours, like I would lose a substantial amount. Where
pretty hard,
I lose a couple hundred thousand in this bet. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be really fucking hard over 1,000 hours to be down
like
30K. Feels like it.
Yeah,
really feels like it. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't want to do this. Like, I really don't
want to
do this.
We all want you to do it.
I would love for you to see it happen.
Yeah. It sounds me so great right. in theory, yes. but in practice, I think we would all lose our minds.
I'd completely
agree. The biggest problem with the practice is the amount of time, right? Like, if I could do this over 100 hours, like,
so do 100 hours.
No, because right. it doesn't prove anything.
proves nothing. A thousand and nothing.
We've been over this, Guapo. Your win rate over 100 hours is meaningless.
Okay. It really is.
But like, I will say that...
About 500 hours.
Okay, that sounds reasonable.
No. Yeah, maybe.
500 hours is enough, I think.
I went on an 800-hour break-even stretch.
Well, yeah, but just don't do that this time.
But you're playing in the softest game. The bigger your edge, then the lower the variance.
I don't know if you've seen high stakes lately, but my man Airball's like not even losing that much these days. Yeah. Pretty soft out there.
Yeah.
I think I know. I know why Oaken's mad at you now.
All right. Look. I don't know. I'm just very steamed that.
You know what grinds my gears?
I'm just very steamed at the notion that somebody who could even read a solver output isn't winning at 2-5.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on, what are we talking about here? 80% of the pool is just guessing on every single fucking decision.
Don't work in those games, Burke.
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yeah, it absolutely does. You want to know why? Because you're not guessing. You're never guessing. You never have to guess. Like 100% of decisions that 80% of the pool was making is literally a guess.
Yeah.
By definition.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're just going off
like, oh, I had a feeling.
Right. Right. Like that's the thing I don't think a lot of people understand is that if we, instead of playing hands, handed people a quiz and we said, okay, like this is your hand, this is the board, this is the action, what are you going to do? And we gave them like 20 questions and then just recycled those 20 questions worded slightly differently. The inconsistencies of their answers would be blatant.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you gave this guy ace queen in this particular hand in this particular spot, right, and asked him what he does, he might pick raise the first time. And then we give him the exact same spot an hour later and ask him the hand again. He's like, pure call.
They're gambling. Yeah.
I understand that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm speaking to the people who think that they are doing something special in this particular pool. Especially if like you're not well studied, right? Like you're just that same guy.
Well, it's the guy that thinks that he has like this strategy to beat roulette, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's the same kind of thinking.
For what it's worth, I don't think he was implying that you couldn't beat the game. I think he was just implying that you're assessing the situation differently than you would. Like he's not. That's. Like,
I legitimately want this deal. I don't think it's a legitimate training site. I think I could demolish Berkey at a crossbook. $50 online tournaments are tougher than 1-3.
You were talking about Sid specifically.
I just
before.
Turned 1K into 100K in 144 days on my Twitch channel.
Wait, don't shout him out.
He's looking for that plug.
I'm trying to see where the original one
join was. My, and then he's going to follow up. Join my paid group.
Him and Woodstock are the same. Sid says, I think his hourly would not be top reg level.
Top 1-3 reg?
At 1-3 live?
That's what I was
saying. Is that even a thing?
Imagine what the top 1-3 reg looks like.
Yeah.
No, this is what you just like you J-backs it. Like you find whoever you think thinks you're the best 1-3 or the best 2-5 player, Berkey will crossbook you.
100%.
And anybody else can take the action and crossbook against Berkey.
I'm done with Berkey's out of touch commentary of stakes he hasn't played in years. Like what are you talking about? Poker is poker. It assesses the exact same. This is the issue that I think is so fundamental to why people don't improve. They truly believe.
Been a comment in chats for as long as.
No, of course.
Existed.
Of course. Obviously, like, I'm
say to Ben CB. They're like, you couldn't beat micros.
And then he just pulls up $2 whatever.
While he's at a 25 KFT.
Yeah, just smashes it. But, like, this is doubling down on like what we were talking about yesterday with D-Neg kind of taking shots at Landon, where he's like eye rolling, like, well, I wouldn't listen to him for advice. I would listen to Chance. Chance gets it. It's like, at the end of the day, the guy that you are most afraid of is the guy who will absolutely fucking mop you. And it's the scientist.
There's a reason why we all hate Euros.
Right.
Because they study. Sven. And they're better Sven. Than us on the aggregate.
They tried really fucking hard.
Do you really want, like, you want seven Svens staring you in the face in your 1-3 game? Good luck.
Right.
Look at this fucking face.
You want this guy?
You want that guy? Seven of them? Eight of them just staring at you?
How about just one?
He's been looking at solver output.
How about just one of him?
Imagine you're gun eight and you guys.
You put one Sven in a 1-3 pool. Do you think your win rate goes up or down?
No.
significantly.
That's why everyone hates them at the table. It's not because we hate Europeans because we're xenophobic.
Right.
We hate them because they study and they're annoying because they're good.
Like, yeah. this is what people... Right.
They're stealing our win rate.
They're better than Americans. They're better than us.
This is what people like Sid don't understand. It's like, if you put me in a 1-3 pool, I will take the lion's share of the win rate immediately. And that isn't like a pat on my back or anything like that. It's that I know things that people who play 1-3 fucking don't. You know, it takes years to cultivate enough knowledge of this game to actually be able to traverse the endless fucking situations. And a lot of that is just experience and being in the spot. A lot of it is actually just being humbled by the game enough to put your pride aside and go study your fucking dick off. And I've had to do both. People who are playing 1-3 haven't had to do either. They're at the entry level.
And you're like, in your heart, you're a live guy.
Right.
Right? It's not like you're like this online guy who's never played live, who can't like look at someone and know. Like,
right, you think I'm going like, to be in a 400 kind of big blind pot where a guy shows me a set and I have top pair and I go, I call.
Yeah.
It's well, like, solver said to call.
Right.
So.
It's like, obviously, I understand that there are exploits available. I'm not an idiot. Do you think that if you guys had... if there was any ability for me to just like live stream just my hole cards and the board for one day in Bobby's room, I think all of this would go out the window. It's just like, if you saw the shit that I fucking get away with, the absolute goddamn nonsense. I mean, just the impossible. It's just like,
I keep that in my head.
I don't give a fuck. They know. They want me in there because I'm doing this stupid shit. Just nobody does anything about it. They just hope that they have kings the time that I'm sitting there tripling it off with fucking seven deuce.
Yeah.
Everybody hopes that.
That shit won't work at 1-3.
I know. No, yeah. I know. Wait till I fucking get...
No, it really won't.
Wait till I get them playing fucking progressive stand-up in the 1-3 games every single day.
I was going to say, you don't have seven deuce. You have to start your own
that,
game.
That you won't get them to do. Yeah.
The fuck I won't.
You got to start your own game.
I will teach all of them. I'll be like, listen, you guys are paying a tuition right now for this penance that I have to pay by being at this table. And I'm going to teach you all how to be absolute action.
Just see
all right?
Like Tom Dwan creep over. Like, you guys playing progressive Squid Game? Can I join? You got a seat open?
Is this a Squid Game that I've heard about?
Is there going to be progressive Squid Game at this 1-3? I mean, like, what's the cap?
Oh, man. Well, I guess this goes nicely into Twitter Tuesdays. We asked you guys, what's a poker concept that you still don't fully understand? What I don't fully understand is how you can dismiss knowledge for feel. And that was like a big conversation that we had yesterday where I just think
I totally understand it.
Do you though?
Yeah, because it makes a lot of sense why people would do that, because knowledge takes work and feel doesn't.
Yeah, I get that.
It's like a totally, it's a rationalization that makes total sense to me.
Do you feel like it happens in the real world where like people who are just incredibly educated on a subject get dismissed yes. by lay people?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I just feel like poker's supposed to be different because it's such a cerebral game. It just seems like so insulting.
Because there's like a whole gambling aspect of that's it. Most people show up to gamble.
That's honestly true. This happens in medicine a lot, right? Like I hear all the stories from Michelle where like she's with a patient and you know she's been through years, if not decades, of schooling, right?
Yeah.
And knows intimate knowledge about like oncology and these kind of things. And then her patient is trying to tell her, you know, that they know better than her yeah. about all these different things.
You know why I think that, yeah. that's a really great parallel. And I think the reason why it happens is because so much of it is still so theoretical, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's just enough that mm-hmm. we don't know my body
or you don't know this or you don't know how I feel.
And that gets progressed a lot. Or
it doesn't matter that the test said this, and this. Right. I don't have that.
That gets professed a lot yeah. publicly where, especially in like nutrition world, right? Where it's like, well, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And it's not that everybody is different. It's that we're not actually able to do studies that segregate the variables enough
yeah.
to be able to say, well, if you live this kind of lifestyle, you could expect this sort of outcome mm-hmm. type of thing. And so we lazily then say, well, do your own research. Everybody's different. Tell me how you feel. Like, and we do lean back on that emotional response of like, yeah. well, how did you feel right. not eating carbs? How did you feel eating only vegetables and that kind of stuff? Oh, I feel amazing. It's like, yeah, you had a lifestyle change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the way it works. So yeah, I guess you're right. Like when it comes to poker, there is this certain sense of hubris that's necessary to even attempt it, mm-hmm. right? And it's hard to shed. it's really hard to be
any,
humbled
like,
enough.
Gambling with edge type of sports betting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people want to, it's like a boost to your ego if you're naturally good at this thing. Like,
right.
You don't need to study. Like, you can feel it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a,
yeah.
There's like a virtuous thing to that. And
I think that's actually a really great way of putting it. We've assigned some level of virtue to the person that doesn't need the tool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're a lesser
no one
man.
Can replicate what he does. It's just natural, you know. It's like
we boost up the Negranos and the Chances, and we put them on these pedestals because like they didn't need the tool, they just figured it out. It's so ironic coming from me because like people don't understand the amount of sims I've ran is like 1/1000th of land, maybe 1/1000000th of Landon. You know, like, and I think Landon is just a representative of the new wave. Like, it's not just him. It's everybody that he surrounds himself with. Mm-hmm. Even guys like Pads, like all the way up to the top.
I'm
like
sitting
these,
with Sam, he's like running sims.
Right. Tens of thousands of sims.
And I'm hearing, no way, really? Like, what's going on?
Right. So imagine somebody who's put in that much work still gets surprised constantly, right? I think about the game a lot, and I think about it from a top-down approach, and I use sims to confirm or deny my thought process as much as possible. But it's very funny that we glorify these people that like didn't need the tool. It feels very similar to like glorifying these guys like Liver King who are just yoked out of their mind. And we're just like, bro, the guy built that. And then you just find out he's been needling.
People gravitate towards anomalies and, you know, people who are like gifted and, you know, it's like a, cause it's like, oh,
it's
I can never be that. Yeah.
It's just a giant facade. It's a lie. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny because the first two responses to this question were direct polar opposites of a representation of this, because I think they both fit the same mold. So Rampage replies, a concept I don't understand is winning. And then Jesse Lonis replies, a concept I don't understand is losing. And it's so funny because I think like both of them fall into the camp of like, well, we don't study that much. We just play really hard and put in volume. And these are the two outcomes that can occur.
Yeah,
one sun runs, one runs bad.
It's a swingy way of doing it, and one's going to swing up and one's going to swing down.
The funniest part is 10 years from now, they'll probably both be smack dab at the exact same win rate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or something will change. One of them will start to study a fuck ton and become a GTO nerd or whatever. But it really does, over enough time and sample, always regress to the mean. These things are predictable. Veronica's answer was great. I actually almost said it myself. I'm glad she put it out there. She said, reverse implied odds. What are we doing here? This is such an archaic concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually probably worth
it. I still use it. I like it.
In what sense? Like, what would you use it
just
regarding?
Just like when you're talking about like deep stack versus not, you know, how it's like a factor stack.
Well,
not
yeah,
as much
but
shallow.
So I think the issue is that when the concept of implied odds and reverse implied odds first came out, it was only utilized with reference to pot odds, and from there we didn't understand how to arrive at equities. So all we could do is estimate based off of outs, and the problem with that is you don't really get a true idea of what the equity looks like, because now you just have to decide if your draw is clean or dirty,
right?
So, for instance, like the sim that we just showed, Jack 8 is drawing to a dead 9 versus King Jack,
equities.
Right. So, like, the notion, if we were really deep there, would be like, oh, Jack 8's a really terrible hand here because it has reverse implied odds. But the reality of it is, within a range construction, Jack 8 with, like, a back door or a front door or something along those lines, very high up in equity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has, you know, a blocker to bigger straights. It has the ability to make a straight of its own. It has the ability to then redraw to a larger straight, et cetera, et cetera. So sure, it might be prioritized a lot lower because the equity of Jack 9 is lower than, or sorry, of Jack 8 is lower than Jack 9, but it's not so low that it suddenly is like, oh no, like when we turn a 9, we just get stacked all the time.
Yeah,
by
it's
King
like
Jack.
A fear-based kind of thing.
That's true,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, if I make my hand and then I'm beat, I'm going to lose a lot of money, so I don't want to draw
it. It's like not playing deuces because they get set over set the most.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, when you make a 9 and they have King Jack, that sucks. Yeah. But how about when you make a 9 and they have a set or two pair or, you know, a flush draw and a
drawing
pair.
To an open ender on a flush board.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Right. So you forget about the fact that, like, yes, there's this tiny concentration of you getting coolered.
Yeah, you like zero in on the
right.
Okay, that makes sense.
But how much of the range does it actually represent for
like
either person?
Like, if this exact card comes and they have this exact hand, then yes. But how likely is that?
And this is why they think I'm going to lose at small stakes. Because everybody in the fucking pool thinks about that. And I'm not thinking that way. So obviously I'm just dusting.
Yep.
I can't fucking breathe.
There's only one way to prove him wrong, Matt.
Stop it. You don't want that, man. The business will collapse.
It'll be all worth it.
It would be funny for like a week, and then it would be.
Think of the content that you would have coming out of this. The business would be booming.
I would be the one in the muck every single fucking day. And it wouldn't be because of a hand. Every single day, it would just be like me crying about the fact that I'm playing with white chips. Yeah. And not the Commerce $100 white chips.
There's no white chips.
Blue chips?
Blue chips, brown chips. Maybe Venetian has white chips.
I remember when dollars were white. What happened?
No. And there's very little of those on the table. You'd be surprised. A lot of red, a lot of green, some black.
We pumping, baby.
Yeah, maybe
Bitcoin's
way too
high for me to play a fucking small stakes challenge.
That's why he's cross-booking 10,000%.
That's true. I would have to, maybe we could do this in Bitcoin instead.
There you go.
This is a good one. Dimitri says, all situations involving overbets. I actually do think that this is something that really plagues people. We did a strat chat on this last week, I believe. Full 90-minute conversation on overbetting, how to structure it, how to defend against it. This is probably one of the areas that if I were starting fresh right now, I would begin with. Because I think if you can learn polarized strategies, the rest kind of falls into place.
That's a good point.
Right? Because like you're just balancing with checks. So it's like, okay, you learn offense and defense at the same time. And that's so different.
You just know how to split your range.
I think too many coaches lean into the lazy teaching where it's like, I'm going to teach you how to range bet. It's like, well, fucking then what?
Range bet this board, you know.
Yeah. It's like, well, fucking then what?
For a while, they were just saying range bet every board a quarter. Yeah. It can't be that bad.
Because the overfold was big.
You don't think that the 1-3 players are going to be able to adjust accordingly to your 2x pot bets?
Imagine I just go play small stakes and the only strategy I play is Geo. Like, that's it.
Honestly,
it would probably be good.
Win. Yeah. No,
probably
I
print.
Think you'd be fine.
Yeah, I actually think it would probably just like print.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, 300% pot, and I'm jamming the turn.
You'd be like,
what do you want to do?
Who is this donkey?
First time it comes Ace-King-5, and they just face like 150% in a single raise pot.
What's I've done that, and I've gotten looks from that.
Of course.
Before, yeah.
Of course.
They're like, did you misclick?
This is fold Ace-10, face up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, okay, I got 4-5. This is a good one too. Brent P said, why people get such a hard on for blockers. Honestly, like we could probably pull strat chats out of this response. Mm-hmm. We got so many replies. This was such a banger tweet by Nikki.
She's really good at these.
Yeah, she's gotten very good at these. This was like 179 replies or something like that. Blockers also, I think, is like one of the laziest concepts that coaches can teach. Mm-hmm. It's so rarely important and it's so nuanced, right? Like if you have a coach who's leading with nuance, quit. Right? There's so many big things that are difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Equity.
Start EV.
Start with position. Start with macro.
Yeah.
And then work your way to the micro.
Yeah.
And blockers are a micro concept.
Very much so. And very rarely considered like early on in a hand.
Yeah. You
know? Right.
Usually like when it's like, why is it this combo and not this one?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how much EV is actually being passed here?
Yeah.
Very, very little. Emerged range. How is a better hand usually folding and a worse hand usually calling to any given bet? I'm sure mischaracterizing it in some way, but it just doesn't make much sense to me. So this is actually a thing that shows up in theory as well. Every once in a blue moon, very specific spots. It's hard to even call it a real concept, but there are these situations where your range will be constructed in a way where it's incredibly sensitive and having certain like pairs or suits or whatever will encourage you to fold.
This is where some blockers come into play.
Right.
Right.
Like there was a situation we played in Poker Out Loud last night where I had bet 10% pot on the river, and the purpose behind the bet, the final board texture was ace, king, 9-7, ace. And I'd bet 10% of pot on the river out of the big blind. And what it's actually supposed to target is 7x, because when I check the turn, in position is supposed to blast is 7x and then under pairs as bluffs. So like 5s, 4s, 3s, and 2s. So I'm actually targeting this 7x. And the way that it works is I'm supposed to bet call off when he jams with hands as bad as my strongest 7. So like, hands as bad as my best nines. So my best nines are supposed to like bet call off like Jack nine. And I even think Jack seven does like a little bit of calling. And the reason is that, he's like bluffing with his no pairs, but he's calling with his 7X. So my 9X gets value from his 7X, but his queen 10 is supposed to jam, and I'm now supposed to fold some of my 9X. So this is kind of like what the merge looks like, right? Where I get called by worse some of the time for 10% pot, but then I fold better versus a jam, right? Some of the time. And it gets a little bit like weird and convoluted when these spots actually come up in practice. But there are definitely situations where people are just like, fuck, I lose to a flush in spite of the fact that I have trips. So I'm going to fold my trips and call with one pair type of things. And it's a situation where like maybe you're just value betting thin with a better one pair. Mm-hmm. And you get trips to fold and one pair to call. And it's just like a weird mergey type of situation. There's a lot of these. We'll go through them all at some point. Maybe for Strat Chat, we'll just like lump them all in. Could be one of those things that we do today, or sorry, not today, this week rather, with Matt and Landon tomorrow. I think that's gonna do it for us. I got too fucked up on this challenge, man.
We're gonna iron out the details. We're gonna make this happen.
We're not.
Listen, sure. The audience wants it.
We're not.
Everybody wants it.
If I could spread it out over 3 years.
3 years?
1,000 hours is a lot.
Okay, play 500.
So play 500.
There's always a game burst.
There's just fire
24 hours
online.
A day, there's always a game.
Do you guys have any idea how many hours is 500 hours?
It's not that much when you can play at any time throughout the whole week. Right?
Sounds like my work week.
This sounds like Jeremiah fucking streaming till it gets to 200K.
Listen, just imagine your play. If you get enough down and enough crossbook, it'd be like you getting to play in your Bellagio game anytime you want for 6 months.
That's true. Yeah. If I could make it 100, 300.
Yeah.
So I don't need the 10X crossbook. I need the 100X crossbook.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's at 10,000%.
If I could find somebody to 100X crossbook me, I would consider it.
You would do it.
I would probably do it. Whatever. I don't know. All right. That's going to do it for us. We're going to be back tomorrow with Matt Hunt here for Strat Chat. We'll see you guys at noon. We'll cover some of these topics that we came in from concepts that you don't understand in poker. We'll pick the best ones. We'll see you guys.
But you get to play the dual free roll.
No.